Lord Vetinari had felt slightly ashamed when he watched the door close behind Captain Vimes. He couldn't work out why. Of course, it was hard on the man, but it was the only way. He took a key from a cabinet by his desk and walked over to the wall. His hands touched a mark on the plaster that was apparently no different from a dozen other marks, but this one caused a section of wall to swing aside on well-oiled hinges. No one knew all the passages and tunnels hidden in the walls of the palace. It was said that some of them went a lot further than that. And there were any amount of old cellars under the city. A man with a pickaxe and a sense of direction could go where he liked just by knocking down forgotten walls. He walked down several narrow flights of steps and along a passage to a door, which he unlocked. It swung back on well-oiled hinges. It was not exactly a dungeon. The room on the other side was quite airy and well lit by several large but high windows. It had a smell of wood shavings and glue. "Look out!" The patrician ducked. Something bat-like clicked and whirred over his head, circled erratically in the middle of the room, and then flew apart into a dozen jerking pieces.
"Oh, dear," said a mild voice. "Back to the drawing tablet. Good afternoon, your lordship."
"Good afternoon, Leonard," said the patrician. "What was that?"
I call it a flapping wing flying device," said Leonard de Querm, getting down off his launching stepladder. "It works by gutta percha strips twisted tightly together, but not very well, I'm afraid."
Leonard of Querm was not in fact all that old. He was one of those people who started looking venerable around the age of 30 and would probably still look about the same at the age of 90. He wasn't exactly bald, either. His head had just grown up through his hair, rising like a mighty rock dome through heavy forest. Inspirations sleet through the universe continuously. Their destination, as if they cared, is the right mind in the place at the right time. They hit the right neuron, there's a chain reaction, and a little while later someone is blinking foolishly in the TV lights and wondering how the hell he came up with the idea of pre-sliced bread in the first place. Leonard of Querm knew about inspirations. One of his earliest inventions was an earthed metal nightcap, worn in the hope that the damn things would stop leaving their white-hot trails across his tortured imagination. It seldom worked. He knew the shame of waking up to find the sheets covered with nocturnal sketches of unfamiliar siege engines and novel designs for apple-peeling machines. The de Querms had been quite rich, and young Leonard had been to a great many schools where he had absorbed a ragbag of information, despite his habit of staring out of the window and sketching the flight of birds. Leonard was one of those unfortunate individuals whose fate it was to be fascinated by the world, the taste, shape, and movement of it. He fascinated Lord Vetinari as well, which is why he was still alive. Some things are so perfect of their type that they are hard to destroy. One of a kind is always special. He was a model prisoner. Give him enough wood, wire, paint, and above all give him paper and pencils, and he stayed put. The patrician moved a stack of drawings and sat down.
"These are good," he said. "What are they?"
"My cartoons," said Leonard.
"This is a good one of the little boy with his kite stuck in a tree," said Lord Vetinari.
"Thank you. May I make you some tea? I'm afraid I don't see many people these days, apart from the man who oils the hinges."
"I've come to..." The patrician stopped and prodded at one of the drawings. "There's a piece of yellow paper stuck to this one," he said suspiciously.
He pulled at it. It came away from the drawing with a faint sucking noise, and then stuck to his fingers. On the note, in Leonard's crabby backward script, were the words, "Crow ot smees sit omem."
"Oh, I'm rather pleased with that," said Leonard. "I call it my handy note-scribbling piece of paper with glue that comes unstuck when you want."
The patrician played with it for a while.
"What's the glue made of?"
"Boiled slugs."
The patrician pulled the paper off one hand. It stuck to his other hand.
"Is that what you came to see me about?"
said Leonard.
"No, I came to talk to you,"
said Lord Vetinari, "about the gun."
"Oh, dear, I'm very sorry."
"I'm afraid it has escaped."
"My goodness, I thought you said you'd done away with it."
"I gave it to the assassins to destroy. After all, they pride themselves on the artistic quality of their work. They should be horrified at the idea of anyone having that sort of power. But the damn fools did not destroy it. They thought they could lock it away.
and now they've lost it.
They didn't destroy it?
Apparently not, the fools.
And nor did you? I wonder why.
I don't know.
I should never have made it. It was merely an application of principles. Ballistics, you know, simple aerodynamics. Chemical power, some rather good alloying, although I say it myself, and I'm rather proud of the rifling idea. I had to make a quite complicated tool for that, you know. Milk? Sugar?
No, thank you.
People are searching for it, I trust?
The assassins are, but they won't find it. They don't think the right way.
The patrician picked up a pile of sketches of the human skeleton. They were extremely good.
Oh, dear.
So I am relying on the watch.
This would be the Captain Vimes you have spoken of.
Lord Vetinari always enjoyed his occasional conversations with Leonard. The man always referred to the city as if it was another world.
Yes.
I hope you have impressed upon him the importance of the task.
In a way, I've absolutely forbidden him to undertake it. Twice.
Leonard nodded.
Ah, I think I understand. I hope it works.
He sighed.
I suppose I should have dismantled it, but it was so clearly a made thing. I had this strange fancy I was merely assembling something that already existed. Sometimes I wonder where I got the whole idea. It seemed, I don't know, sacrilege, I suppose, to dismantle it. It'd be like dismantling a person. Biscuit?
Dismantling a person is sometimes necessary, said Lord Vetinari.
This, of course, is a point of view, said Leonard de Querm, politely.
You mentioned sacrilege, said Lord Vetinari. Normally that involves gods of some sort, does it not?
Did I use the word? I can't imagine there is a god of gons.
It is quite hard, yes.
The patrician shifted uneasily, reached down behind him, and pulled out an object.
What, he said, is this?
Oh, I wondered where that had gone, said Leonard. It's a model of my spinning up into the air machine.
It has probably been gathered that although Leonard de Querm was absolutely the greatest technological genius of time, he was a bit of a detritus when it came to thinking up names. Lord Vetinari prodded the little rotor.
Would it work?
Oh, yes, said Leonard.
He sighed. If you can find one man with the strength of 10 men who can turn the handle at about 1,000 revolutions a minute.
The patrician relaxed, in a way which only then drew gentle attention to the foregoing moment of tension. Now there is in this city, he said, a man with a gun. He has used it successfully once and almost succeeded a second time. Could anyone have invented the gun?
No, said Leonard. I am a genius.
He said it quite simply. It was a statement of fact.
Understood. But once a gun has been invented, Leonard, how much of a genius needs someone be to make the second one?
The rifling technique requires considerable finesse, and the cocking mechanism that slides the bullet assembly is finely balanced. And, of course, the end of the barrel must be very...
Leonard saw the patrician's expression and shrugged.
He must be a clever man, he said.
The city is full of clever men, said the patrician, and dwarfs. Clever men and dwarfs who tinker with things.
I am so very sorry.
They never think.
Indeed.
Lord Vetinari leaned back and stared at the skylight.
They do things like open the 3 Jolly Luck Takeaway Fish Bar on the site of the old temple in Dagon Street on the night of the winter solstice when it also happens to be full moon.
That's people for you, I'm afraid.
I never did find out what happened to Mr. Hong.
Poor fellow.
And then there's the wizards. Tinker, tinker, tinker. Never think twice before grabbing a thread of the fabric of reality and giving it a pull.
Shocking.
The alchemists? Their idea of civic duty is mixing up things to see what happens.
I hear the bangs. even here. And then, of course, along comes someone like you. I really am terribly sorry.
Lord Vetinari turned the model flying machine over and over in his fingers.
You dream of flying, he said.
Oh, yes. Then men would be truly free. From the air there are no boundaries. There could be no more war, because the sky is endless. How happy we would be if we could but fly.
Vetinari turned the machine over and over in his hands.
Yes, he said. I dare say we would.
I had tried clockwork, you know.
I'm sorry. I was thinking about something else.
I meant clockwork to power my flying machine, but it won't work.
Oh.
There's a limit to the power of a spring, no matter how tightly one winds it.
Oh, yes. And you hope that if you wind a spring one way, all its energies will unwind the other way, and sometimes you have to wind the spring as tight as it will go, said Vetinari, and pray it doesn't break.
His expression changed.
Oh, dear, he said.
Pardon? Said Leonard.
He didn't thump the wall. I may have gone too far.
Detritus sat and steamed. Now he felt hungry, not for food, but for things to think about. As the temperature sank, the efficiency of his brain increased even more. It needed something to do. He calculated the number of bricks in the wall, first in twos and then in tens and finally in sixteens. The numbers formed up and marched past his brain in terrified obedience. Division and multiplication were discovered, algebra was invented and provided an interesting diversion for a minute or two, and then he felt the fog of numbers drift away and looked up and saw the sparkling distant mountains of calculus. Trolls evolved in high, rocky, and above all in cold places. Their silicon brains were used to operating at low temperatures, but down on the muggy plains the heat build-up slowed them down and made them dull. It wasn't that only stupid trolls came down to the city. Trolls who decided to come down to the city were often quite smart, but they became stupid. Detritus was considered moronic even by city troll standards, but that was simply because his brain was naturally optimized for a temperature seldom reached in Ankh-Morpork, even during the coldest winter. Now his brain was nearing its ideal temperature of operation. Unfortunately, this was pretty close to a troll's optimum point of death. Part of his brain gave some thought to this. There was a high probability of rescue. That meant he'd have to leave. That meant he'd become stupid again, as sure as 10^3 multiplied by ME over MP multiplied by omega to the power of 6 times omega to the power of G minus half N equals 10N. Better make the most of it, then. He went back to the world of numbers so complex that they had no meaning, only a transitional point of view, and got on with freezing to death as well. Dibbler reached the Butcher's Guild very shortly after Cuddy. The big red doors had been kicked open, and a small butcher was sitting just inside them, rubbing his nose.
Which way did he go?
That way.
And in the guild's main hall, the master butcher Gerhard Sock was staggering around in circles. This was because Cuddy's boots were planted on his chest. The dwarf was hanging onto the man's vest like a yachtsman tacking into a gale, and whirling his axe round and round in front of Sock's face.
You give it to me right now, or I'll make you eat your own nose.
A crowd of apprentice butchers was trying to keep out of the way.
But don't argue with me. I'm an officer of the watch, I am.
But you...
You've got one last chance, mister. Give it to me right now.
Sock shut his eyes.
What is it you want?
The crowd waited.
Ah, said Cuddy.
Ah,
ha, ha. Didn't I say?
No.
I'm pretty sure I did, you know.
You didn't?
Oh. Well, it's the key to the pork futures warehouse, if you must know.
Cuddy jumped down.
Why?
The axe hovered in front of his nose again.
I was just asking,
said Sock in a desperate and distant voice.
There's a man of the watch in there, freezing to death, said Cuddy.
There was quite a crowd around them when they finally got the main door open. Lumps of ice clinked on the stones, and there was a rush of super cold air. Frost covered the floor and the rows of hanging carcasses on their backwards journey through time. It also covered a detritus-shaped lump, squatting in the middle of the floor. They carried it out into the sunlight.
Should his eyes be flashing on and off like that?
said Dibbler.
"Can you hear me?" shouted Cuddy. "Detritus!"
Detritus blinked. Ice slid off him in the day's heat. He could feel the cracking up of the marvellous universe of numbers. The rising temperature hit his thoughts like a flamethrower caressing a snowflake.
"Say something,"
said Cuddy. Towers of intellect collapsed as the fire roared through Detritus's brain.
"Hey, look at this,"
said one of the apprentices. The inner walls of the warehouse were covered with numbers. Equations as complex as a neural network had been scraped in the frost. At some point in the calculation, the mathematician had changed from using numbers to using letters. And then, letters themselves hadn't been sufficient. Brackets like cages enclosed expressions which were to normal mathematics what a city is to a map. They got simpler as the goal neared. Simpler, yet containing in the flowing lines of their simplicity a Spartan and wonderful complexity. Cuddy stared at them. He knew he'd never be able to understand them in 100 years. The frost crumbled in the warmer air. The equations narrowed as they were carried on down the wall and across the floor to where the troll had been sitting, until they became just a few expressions that appeared to move and sparkle with a life of their own. This was maths without numbers, pure as lightning. They narrowed to a point, and at the point was just a very simple symbol. Equals.
Equals what? Said Cuddy. Equals what?
The frost collapsed. Cuddy went outside. Detritus was now sitting in a puddle of water, surrounded by a crowd of human onlookers.
Can't one of you get him a blanket or something? He said.
A very fat man said,
Huh? Who'd use a blanket after it had been on a troll?
Huh, yes, good point, said Cuddy.
He glanced at the 5 holes in Detritus's breastplate. They were at about head height for a dwarf.
"Could you come over here for a moment, please?"
The man grinned at his friends and sauntered over.
"I expect you can see the holes in his armour, right?"
said Cuddy. C.M.O.T. Dibbler was a survivor. In the same way that rodents and insects can sense an earthquake ahead of the first tremors, so he could tell if something big was about to go down on the street. Cuddy was being too nice. When a dwarf was nice like that, it meant he was saving up to be nasty later on.
"I'll just, go about my business, then," he said, and backed away.
"I've got nothing against dwarfs, mind you," said the fat man. "I mean, dwarfs is practically people in my book, just shorter humans, almost. But trolls, well, they're not the same as us, right?"
"Excuse me, excuse me, gangway, gangway," said Dibbler.
Achieving with his cart the kind of getaway customarily associated with vehicles that have fluffy dice on the windscreen.
"That's a nice coach you've got there," said Cuddy.
Dibbler's cart went around the corner on 1 wheel.
"It's a nice coat," said Cuddy. "You know what you should do with a coat like that?"
The man's forehead wrinkled.
"Take it off right now and give it to the troll."
"Why, you little—"
The man grabbed Cuddy by his shirt and wrenched him upwards. The dwarf's hand moved very quickly. There was a scrape of metal. Man and dwarf made an interesting and absolute stationary tableau for a few seconds. Cuddy had been brought up almost level with the man's face and watched with interest as the eyes began to water.
"Let me down," said Cuddy, "gently. I make involuntary muscle movements if I'm startled."
The man did so.
"Now, take off your coat." "Good. Just pass it over, thank you."
"Your axe,"
the man murmured.
"Axe? Axe? My axe?"
Cuddy looked down.
"Well, well, well. Hardly knew I was holding it there. My axe. Well, there's a thing."
The man was trying to stand on tiptoe. His eyes were watering.
"The thing about this axe," said Cuddy, "the interesting thing is that it's a throwing axe. I was champion 3 years running up at Copperhead. I could draw it and split a twig 30 yards away in 1 second, behind me. And I was ill that day. A bilious attack."
He backed away. The man sank gratefully onto his heels. Cuddy draped the coat over the troll's shoulders.
"Come on your feet," he said. "Let's get you home."
The troll lumbered upright.
"How many fingers am I holding up?" said Cuddy.
Detritus peered.
2 and 1, he suggested.
"It'll do," said Cuddy, "for a start."
Mr. Cheese looked over the bar at Captain Vimes, who hadn't moved for an hour. The bucket was used to serious drinkers who drank without pleasure but with a sort of determination never to see sobriety again. But this was something new. This was worrying. He didn't want a death on his hands. There was no one else in the bar. He hung his apron on a nail and hurried out towards the watch house, almost colliding with Carrot and Angua in the doorway.
"Oh, I'm glad that it's you, Corporal Carrot," he said. "You'd better come. It's Captain Vimes."
"What's happened to him?"
"I don't know. He's drunk an awful lot."
"I thought he was off the stuff."
"I think," said Mr. Cheese cautiously, "that this is not the case any more."
A scene somewhere near Quarry Lane.
"Where are we going?"
"I'm going to get someone to have a look at you."
"Not dwarf, Doctor."
"There must be someone up here who knows how to slap some quick-drying cement on you, or whatever you do. Should you be oozing like that?"
"Dunno. Never oozed before. Where we?"
"Dunno. Never been down here before."
The area was on the windward side of the cattle yards and the slaughterhouse district. That meant it was shunned as living space by everyone except trolls, to whom the organic odours were about as relevant and noticeable as the smell of granite would be to humans. The old joke went, "The trolls live next to the cattle yard? What about the stench? Oh, the cattle don't mind." Which was daft. Trolls didn't smell, except to other trolls. There was a slabby look about the buildings here. They'd been built for humans but adapted by trolls, which broadly had meant kicking the doorways wider and blocking up the windows. It was still daylight. There weren't any trolls visible.
"Ugh," said
Detritus.
"Come on, big man," said Cuddy, pushing Detritus along like a tug pushes a tanker.
"Lance Constable Cuddy?"
"Yes."
"You a dwarf. This is Quarry Lane. You found here, you in deep trouble."
"We are city guards."
"Chrysoprase, he not give a coprolith about that stuff."
Cuddy looked around.
"What do you people use for doctors, anyway?"
A troll face appeared in a doorway. And another. And another. What Cuddy had thought was a pile of rubble turned out to be a troll. There were suddenly trolls everywhere. "I'm a guard," thought Cuddy. "That's what Sergeant Colon said. Stop being a dwarf and start being a watchman. That's what I am. Not a dwarf. A watchman. They gave me a badge shaped like a shield. City Watch. That's me. I carry a badge." I wish it was a lot bigger. Vimes was sitting quietly at a table in the corner of the bucket. There were some pieces of paper and a handful of metal objects in front of him, but he was staring at his fist. It was lying on the table, clenched so tight the knuckles were white.
"Captain Vimes," said Carrot, waving a hand in front of his eyes. There was no response.
"How much has he had?"
2 nips of whiskey, that's all."
"That shouldn't do this to him, even on an empty stomach," said Carrot.
Angua pointed at the neck of a bottle protruding from Vimes's pocket.
"I don't think he's been drinking on an empty stomach," she said. "I think he put some alcohol in it first."
"Captain Vimes," said Carrot again.
"What's he holding in his hand?"
said Angua.
"I don't know. This is bad. I've never seen him like this before. Come on, you take the stuff. I'll take the captain."
"He hasn't paid for his drink," said Mr. Cheese.
Angua and Carrot looked at him. "On the house?" said Mr. Cheese. There was a wall of trolls around Cuddy. It was as good a choice of word as any. Right now, their attitude was more of surprise than menace, such as dogs might show if a cat had just sauntered into the kennels. But when they'd finally got used to the idea that he really existed, it was probably only a matter of time before this state of affairs no longer obtained. Finally, one of them said,
"What this, then?"
"He a man of the watch, same as me," said Detritus.
"Him a dwarf?"
"He a watchman."
"Him got bloody cheek, I know that."
A stubby troll finger prodded Cuddy in the back. The trolls crowded in.
"I count to 10, said Detritus. "Then any troll not going about that troll's business, he a sorry troll."
"You, Detritus," said a particularly wide troll. "Everyone know you, stupid troll. You join watch because, stupid troll, you can't count to..." Wham!
"1, said Detritus. 2. 3. 4. 5.
Six.
The recumbent troll looked up in amazement.
That detritus him counting?
There was a whirring noise and an axe bounced off the wall near Detritus's head. There were dwarfs coming up the street with a purposeful and deadly air. The trolls scattered. Cuddy ran forward.
What are you lot doing? He said. Are you mad or something?
A dwarf pointed a trembling finger at Detritus.
What's that?
He's a watchman. Looks like a troll to me. Get it?
Cuddy took a step backwards and produced his axe.
I know you, strong in the arm, he said. What's this all about?
You know, watchman, said Strong in the Arm. The watch say a troll killed Bjorn Hammerhawk. They've found the troll.
No, that's not.
There was a sound behind Cuddy. The trolls were back, armed for dwarf. Detritus turned around and waved a finger at them.
Any troll move, he said, and I start counting.
Hammerhawk was killed by a man, said Cuddy. Captain Vimes thinks... The watch have got the troll, said a dwarf. Damn rocks!
Great suckers!
Monoliths!
Eaters of rats! Huh? I been a man only hardly any time, said Detritus, and already I fed up with you stupid trolls. What you think humans say, eh? Oh, them ethnic, them don't know how to behave in a big city. Go around weaving clubs at the drop of a thing you wear on your head.
We're watchmen, said Cuddy. Our job is to keep the peace.
Good, said Strong in the Arm. Go and keep it safe somewhere until we need it.
This is not Coombe Valley, said Detritus.
That's right, shouted a dwarf at the back of the crowd. This time we can see you.
Trolls and dwarfs were pouring in at either end of the street.
What would Corporal Carrot do at a time like this? Whispered Cuddy.
He say, you bad people make me angry, you stop, toot, sweet.
And then they'd go away, right?
Yeah.
What would happen if we tried that?
We look in gutter for our heads.
I think you're right.
You see that alley? It's a nice alley. It say, hello, you outnumbered. 256 plus 64 plus 8 plus 2 plus 1 to 1. Drop in and see me.
A club bounced off Detritus's helmet.
Run!
The two watchmen sprinted for the alley. The impromptu armies watched them, and then, differences momentarily forgotten, gave chase.
Where this go?
It goes away from the people chasing us.
I like this alley.
Behind them, the pursuers, suddenly trying to make progress in a gap barely wide enough to accommodate a troll, realized that they were pushing and shoving with their mortal enemies and started to fight one another in the quickest, nastiest, and above all, narrowest battle ever held in the city. Cuddy waved Detritus to a halt and peered around a corner.
I think we're safe, he said. All we have to do is get out of the other end of this and get back to the watchhouse, okay?
He turned around, failed to see the troll, took a step forward, and vanished temporarily from the world of men.